Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
PodCube.
Our PodCube devices are able to record audio from any time or place, in space or time or place.
And this is what they're picking up.
Dr. Monochrome, I really don't think Mr. Jones is going to appreciate you walking out in the middle of open heart surgery.
Listen and listen closely. Is it going to be a sterile room if I make a big pee-pee mess in my big boy scrubs?
Dr. Monochrome, what did you say?
I either need to go or someone needs to hand me a clamp.
Search PodCube in your podcast app or go to poweredbypodcube.com. PodCube.
The future
is yesterday.
Well, hey there. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. Before we get started, as always, we want to thank our new patrons. Nicole Neely, Jalil Green, M.N. Wiggins, Barbara Henning, Brian Christopher, You Fool, Warren is Dead, Alicia Widener, and Angie Stabler. Thank you so much for your support, and welcome to the Pod Fam. Y'all, we went to Creepaway Camp this year. Head on over to the Creepy Podcast feed to hear me and Ian tell a classic 13 spooky story to a bunch of other horror podcasters. You'll definitely recognize official girlfriend of the podcast and 13 alum, Shelby Novak. Our story, There's Something About the Beach at Night, was written by Ian and narrated by me. You'll find it on day 4 of camp. But we're pretty sure you're going to want to listen to the whole series. Check the show notes for a link to Creepy. Today's story is part 2 of a 2-part series. So if you haven't listened to part 1... go on and do that now. We'll be here when you get back. Today's story is The Well, Part 2. Written by M.N. Wiggins. Additional voices in this episode are provided by Josiah O. Knight, as well as the entire creative team behind the comedy sci-fi podcast, PodCube. Check the show notes for a link and be sure to give them a follow. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show. I felt my stomach drop as Granny bustled into the house.
We're going after it?
I called after her.
We should run! Call the police!
But she was already coming back through the screen door, brandishing her largest carving knife. She skipped down the steps and onto the path.
Police my butt. Take too long to explain. This is our problem and we'll handle it. Get my chickens. I'll meet you there.
She hopped down the trail and around the corner. I called after her.
At least don't run while you're carrying that knife. Sheesh, what are you, 5?
A few minutes later, I sprinted into the clearing empty-handed. I bent over with my hands on my knees and panted.
All the chickens, dead.
She stood at the well, holding a slack rope tied to the flower bed.
I know.
She pointed to a 6-foot swath of dead soil and missing trees, leading away from the well.
After 95 years, I suspect it's powerfully hungry.
She winked.
See what I did there? Exact number. Only average people use averages.
I managed an eye roll, and I pulled up on the other end of the rope.
No camera. We don't need it anyway. We'll see it soon enough.
I sighed.
There's something I haven't told you, Grandma. This thing, it didn't eat the chickens. It
I don't know. There's nothing left. Just feathers and skin over bones. Like air out of a tire. I don't think we can kill it with a knife.
She tucked the knife into her blue summer dress's waistband.
This was for cutting the rope if it had still been down there. Now, I'm just gonna carry it to look cool.
She trotted down the 6-foot path that led toward the house.
Come on, we're burning daylight.
I chased behind, calling after her.
Who are you?
Past our house and the chicken houses, the path turned towards Myers Creek. I begged her to slow down.
Been slow for too long. I feel like I'm 50 again. But 50's like super old.
She grinned.
We'll see about that. When this is over, your grandma's going back to the gathering place. Or whatever they call it these days. I'm back on the market, baby.
Her eyes sparkled.
Ew.
I froze at the creek as she hopped across on the stones. She turned and saw what I had. Dead trout caught on the bank. Nothing but skin shriveled over their tiny skeletons.
I know what you're thinking, sweetheart, but we won't know until we reach the Flanders. Let's go.
My heart rate rose with each step on the trail toward my best friend's house.
We should have called,
I said, still working to keep pace with her.
We should have warned them. Nothing we can do now except to get there.
I pointed as we came up the hill.
Look!
The trail skirted the edge of the Flanders house and headed beyond. My grandmother stopped with her hands on her hips.
Well, blessings for that.
She stared for a moment.
I think I know what it's after. Come on.
She led us up onto the freshly painted Flanders porch. When no one answered our knock, she grabbed a lawn gnome and shoved its head through the middle decorative window in the Flanders front door.
What are you doing?
I cried.
We need a phone. But Grandma, we can't fit through there. The big windows are right over here.
She rolled down her sleeve and stretched her arm through the door.
Bigger window is more expensive to replace, and you could cut yourself slipping in.
Her tongue protruded as she fiddled with the unseen lock until it clicked. Once again, I stared at my sweet, sweet grandmother in horror. But she just shrugged.
Did you think I was a nun?
By the time we arrived at the Bentley farm, the police were already there, as well as the coroner's van. A deputy was taping off the area.
Rupert,
my grandmother said to the deputy with a nod.
Where's Danny?
Hey, you can't be here.
The deputy began, but then his eyes widened.
Is that you, Mrs. Pritchett?
Granny rolled her eyes.
You've known me ever since you were a little boy stealing peaches off our trees. Now where's Danny?
But you look different.
Thank you, son. Based on the ambiguity of your comment, I can see that your powers of detailed observation are a credit to the force.
Rupert smiled, totally sincere.
Well, thank you, ma'am, but how?
Granny gave him a dismissive wave.
I've been to the beauty salon. That's all. I need to see Danny.
Well, which one? Hare Court of Appeals? Or, the Cut and Cuss? Because I'm going to send my wife right over.
Granny was not amused.
Rupert,
she demanded. The deputy seemed to come to his senses. He rubbed the back of his neck as a stretcher, loaded with a body-sized bag, was raised into the van.
Right, yeah, this is like nothing I've ever seen. Please, Miss Pritchett, get Clarissa out of here.
How many?
Granny asked sharply. Rupert looked down.
I can't comment. It's an ongoing investigation.
Son, I asked you how many.
All but two. Mrs. Bentley is up north helping her daughter move. Upstate New York, I heard.
Well, thank the Lord. Granny sighed. We need to talk to Danny now.
Ma'am, Sheriff's busy. I'll ask him to swing by your place later.
I watched Granny's eyes narrow. How long you been married, Rupert? She asked simply.
12 years.
You know, I never told anyone who I caught you with up in the loft of my barn. How long ago was that?
Rupert paled. Then he grabbed the radio affixed to his shoulder and called the sheriff. At the station, I trembled in the interrogation room as I sat holding my grandmother's hand. The sheriff sat across from us and shook his head.
Most gruesome murders I've seen since... well... I mean, what do you expect me to do here? Put out an APB on the boogeyman?
He set his elbows on the table and looked right at Granny.
Something's different about you today, Alice.
New outfits all. You sent Rupert out to my farm?
Dead chickens, like you said.
Same as the dead fish at Myers Creek,
I added. Granny pointed to the sheriff.
And same as those bodies you pulled out at the Bentley house.
He held up a hand.
Now, we won't know anything until the coroner...
Tells you what?
She asked.
You already know what this is, and you know it's not going to stop.
I raised my hand.
How does he know, Grandma? I thought we couldn't tell anyone.
Because he was there, sweetie.
Where?
The sheriff's eyes softened as he looked at me.
At the farm. The day, your mama died, honey.
I blinked back.
I don't understand.
My grandmother took a breath.
Your mama didn't die giving birth.
Not exactly.
But that's what you told me.
I trailed off as Granny looked away.
She died around the time you were born,
she said. I shook my head.
That can't be. Her headstone says that she died on my birthday.
Granny shrugged.
For an extra 20, the headstone will say anything you want.
I gaped at her.
You lied?
She pointed at me.
Don't judge me.
Then she dropped her finger.
Yeah, I lied. But it was for your own good. I couldn't tell you until you knew about the well. Now could I?
I couldn't believe it.
But you told me about the well yesterday. You didn't say one thing about my mother.
She sighed.
I was getting around to it. Eventually. When it was your mama's job to tend to the well, she took it very seriously. Insisted on doing it, even while pregnant. That well began to rumble and growl a little, and the farther along she got, the louder it became.
She patted my hand.
That's how we knew you were like Clyde, full of life, blessed with the touch. The creature sensed it, craved it like folks crave liquor. That's what it does. It sucks the life out of whatever it can, leaves nothing but dirt and bones.
I covered my mouth.
And my mother?
She sighed. After you were born, the rumblings got so bad, you could hear them all over town like a thunderstorm. Next day, while I was tending the chickens, your mama got out of bed and took a can of gasoline to the well. I got to the clearing just as she was striking the match. But before she could drop it,
That thing climbed the gasoline along the sides of the well. And it took her. Only thing left of your mama was, well, you know. The sheriff leaned toward me.
I was a patrolman back then, and first on the scene. Alice told me what had happened, and I saw your mama's remains, and I helped her cover it up. Filed it as a death during childbirth. No need to, burden townsfolk with that kind of knowledge. And that, the rumbling stopped.
And that justifies lying about my mother's death?
I demanded.
Yeah, Clarissa, it does. Bad enough people covered up the murders of your family 100 years ago, and, well, children sing that horrible nursery rhyme. We all needed to move on.
Well, I replied in a hushed tone. I suppose no one's moving on today. Today, everyone will know. He nodded.
You're right about that. So let's get to it. Alice, you're the expert. What can we do?
I interrupted.
It leaves a 6-foot-wide path wherever it goes, so we can track it.
That's good, honey. What does it look like, Alice? You never said back then.
Granny shrugged. No real shape to it. More of an ooze, I guess. A dark liquid like engine oil. But when it's near, you can feel it. Evil. The sheriff took off his glasses, and he pinched the bridge of his nose.
So you're saying we need to track down and kill a shapeless evil thing that sucks the life out of everything it touches? Just like my ex. How do we even kill it? Do we torch it? Throw out big old bags of kitty litter?
Granny shook her head. I don't think you can. I imagine the best we can do is trap it and figure out a way of getting it back into the well. I'm not even sure why the well held it. Maybe it was the stone Bentley used. I don't know.
Well, that's a start. How can we find out what kind of stone it is?
My eyes brightened.
Mr. Johnson could tell us. He knows everything.
Granny nodded. All right, Danny. Well, you protect the townsfolk as best you can. Clarissa and I will go grab Mud Puddle and see about that stone. He grinned.
You giving orders around here now? You want this badge?
Granny smiled back.
Maybe I ought to. So far, I haven't seen you do squat.
He rubbed his chin.
You look good today, Alice. Something's different. And it ain't your damn dress.
Granny smiled and pushed a lock of hair behind her ear.
Well, maybe we could investigate that when this is all over, Sheriff. You still favor my pecan pie?
I gaped at her.
Grandma!
Back at the farm, Mr. Johnson scraped the inside of the rim of the well with his pocket knife.
At first appearance, this looks to be nothing more than common large granule igneous, but I suspect...
He rubbed the dust between his fingers and licked it.
Yeah, it's more specifically aplite. I'd need my microscope to confirm.
I wore a goofy smile, and I nodded as if in a trance. My grandmother nudged me.
Stop it with the googly eyes,
she whispered.
Now, speak English, Mud.
I elbowed her ribs.
Carl.
Oh, it's a special form of granite, mostly non-porous. It'd be good for, let's say, containing liquids. Actually, perfect for a well.
Granny locked eyes with me, and Mr. Johnson looked between us.
What's all this about, if I might ask? I mean, don't get me wrong, it's certainly more interesting than the crossword puzzles I'd planned for this afternoon.
Granny waved him off.
Oh, nothing you need to worry about, Carl. But we appreciate you coming out here.
I held up a finger.
Where could we find this Appleite, Mr. Johnson?
He smiled.
It's Appleite, but that's close. Not really seen in this area. Although, a few years back, one of the Bentley kids brought one in for the science fair. Oh, terrible project. He had a rock on a sheet of paper. Called it a gravity test. A D minus for sure. Oh, say, what did you think of Magical Arkansas Tales? I really enjoyed it when I was your age.
My grandmother raised her eyebrows.
Is that where she got that trashy alien book? Only magic in it was when I made it disappear.
I covered with a laugh.
She's joking, of course.
I just couldn't take my eyes off him.
It was perfect. I loved it.
Blue lights flashed from the field beyond the woods, and the sheriff appeared in the clearing.
Hope you've got something. It's taken the Coopers, Andersons, the Gilchrists. The reports are coming from all over town. If it was an oil slick, it's more than that now. Got body parts a-coming out of it.
Mr. Johnson looked confused, so I brought him up to speed as Granny talked to the sheriff. She looked at him with sorrowful eyes.
Has it killed anyone else?
Not that we've heard, but it's fast. Comes up through the dirt, maybe asphalt. I don't know, Alice. I got nothing but dead bodies. Anything new over here?
She nodded.
Stone came from the Bentley farm.
Then her eyes narrowed.
You said it got the Coopers, Andersons, and the Gilchrists? Did it kill them all, or were some spared?
Killed Joe Cooper and his boys, but not the little girl or Martha. Took Mary Anderson and her girls, but not Bob. All the Gilchrists. It's pretty random.
Granny shook her head. I don't think so.
If you've got a thought here, now's the time to share.
It's just an idea that I've had ever since it skipped the Flanders for the Bentleys,
Granny mused.
But the Flanders weren't home,
I said. She nodded.
I thought that too, at first. But why didn't it come after us on the farm? We were ripe for the taking.
I thought about my new gift.
Maybe it has other plans for us. Maybe we're dessert.
I'm not following any of this.
My grandmother patted him on the shoulder.
That's okay, Carl. Now, all four families attacked were present during the murders.
The sheriff took off his hat and rubbed his silver hair.
Well, of course they were, Alice. They were the victims.
No, I mean the murder of our family.
What murders?
You really think this monster is your great-uncle Clyde out for revenge? Those people died over a generation ago.
Granny folded her arms.
That thing's been stewing for 95 years. I suspect when those who killed you aren't around for the taking, their family will have to do.
Now, look here, Alice. I can accept something nasty came out of your well. But if you're suggesting that this has anything to do with 100-year-old murders, you are off your rocker.
I'm not suggesting. I'm telling. Mama Esther told me who was there that night, and that's who's getting killed.
Well, what about Mary Anderson? They moved in town 10 years ago.
Granny just shook her head.
Mary's maiden name was Hutchins, remember? The Hutchins were there that night. They moved away back when we were in school. Think about it. It's killing the blood relatives and sparing the others. Why else?
Oh, did I hear you say that the Cooper's daughter was spared? Because if your hypothesis is correct, shouldn't she have been attacked too?
She was adopted.
I scratched my head.
But all the Gilchrists died. Miss Gilchrist wouldn't have been blood related to them.
The sheriff and Mr. Johnson looked away as my grandmother put an arm around me.
It's okay, honey. I'll explain that one another day.
If you're right, Alice, who's next?
Only other family left around here are the Stones.
The sheriff spoke into his shoulder mic and ordered deputies to their residence. I covered my mouth.
It can't go after Reverend Stone's family.
My grandmother sighed.
First, we don't know the rules here. And second, he ain't that great a preacher.
The sheriff and Mr. Johnson nodded.
Well, now that we know where it's headed, we can trap it.
Oh, I can help with that. Although the statistical likelihood of the existence of a supernatural being is pretty...
My grandmother rolled her eyes.
Time is short, Mud Carl. Please just spit it out.
Salient point. I would hypothesize that the non-porous nature of the Aplite was the key to the theoretical creature's containment in the well, right? So if we simply collect enough from the Bentley farm, we could create a prison of sorts.
The sheriff nodded.
I'll get enough people to make short work of collecting rock, if there's enough still around. And, well, we can use the Reverend as bait. He'll love that.
Blue lights led our procession of three pickups loaded with rock back into town. Under Mr. Johnson's direction, a large dump truck pulled into Reverend Stone's driveway with a cherry picker parked nearby in the Stone's front yard. I helped the remaining townspeople line the bottom of the dump truck bed with Aplite in short order. Welders tacked steel wire mesh around the sides of the bed, leaving enough space to slide in rock along the bed walls. And as we worked, Miss Stone served red plastic cups of Kool-Aid, with occasional glances at the deep ruts the cherry picker had cut into her manicured lawn. With rock now lining three bed walls behind the mesh, a fourth wall was created on the heavy-duty tailgate. All that was left was to lower the good reverend down and wait. Reverend Stone's upper lip trembled as he hung mid-air in his cherry picker pulpit. He looked down into the dump truck's bed.
Are you sure about this?
He called out to the rest of the townspeople, looking on from the safety of a neighbor's lawn across the street.
Show a little faith, Roger.
My grandmother replied on the sheriff's bullhorn.
First time for everything. Soon as it's in there, we'll close the gate.
Well, Shouldn't the gate closer stand a little closer?
You'll be fine. Act like you've got a pair.
What if it jumps at me?
Granny rolled her eyes and squeezed the bullhorn's trigger.
Tim will raise you up long before that happens. If he ain't drunk yet.
Tim Elkinson saluted from his post in the cherry picker's cab. Reverend Stone wiped sweat from his brow, swallowed hard, and closed his eyes. With arms stretched toward heaven, he led a prayer asking for a blessing of these brave townspeople, the truck, the rocks, the hydraulics on the cherry picker, and for the swiftness and sobriety of Mr. Elkinson. Then he prayed for his ex-wife, his dog, the bank officer who'd refused him a loan, and for forgiveness for accidentally revealing his neighbor's affair with his other neighbor and the subsequent divorce. Then he screamed.
Oh no! It's here! I see it!
The grass in the Stone's backyard shriveled and disappeared into a 6-foot swath of bare dirt, washing forward under their wooden fence and into the front yard. Everyone gasped and huddled on the safety of the paved street. Mr. Elkinson amongst our number. Reverend Stone cried and begged to be raised as the path stopped at the edge of his driveway. The sheriff bullhorned.
You men get into position. We'll need to flip that gate up quick.
But no one budged.
Reverend Stone looked on in horror. The dirt vibrated at the end of the path, and a dark ooze filtered up through the dirt. An ooze-covered hand emerged from the puddle, followed by an arm and an elbow. The hand pushed up a shapeless, flowing form, nearly 6 feet tall. A leg came in and out of view, first from the front, then from the side, then not seen. The arm did the same. "It's gotten stronger," my grandmother whispered as she positioned herself in front of me. "Can you feel it?" The top of the form tilted in a flow to the right, as if cocking a head to examine the truck and the bait dangling above. Bait that had lost all the blood in his face and whose fingers gripped the edge of the cherry picker bucket with white knuckles. The form twisted itself and lunged at the crowd, stopping short of the asphalt as we screamed. In a flash, it disappeared into the ground. We took a collective breath, except for Reverend Stone, who was pointing at us and yelling. The form was in the neighbor's yard behind us, easily within touching distance. Everyone tried to run, but it moved to counter, appearing on this side of the street, then the other, then up through the street potholes. We trembled in indecision in the center of the street as the form herded us into a tight group. Then, the form came through the dirt opposite the stone house, making itself one full story tall and thin. From the tip of the form, an ooze-covered face emerged. It leaned across the asphalt toward the group. Toward me. The crowd tried running again, but a flow of arm-like extensions formed a lasso. The phase oozed within an inch of me. I leaned back as far as I could and backward into the group, into Mr. Johnson's arms. My grandmother started singing a lullaby, one she would later tell me she'd sung to the well for decades, passed down from her mother, who'd learned it from Mama Esther. The face slithered toward her like a charmed snake. Then it shrank back into the earth, appeared three houses over, and was gone. We watched as a swath of pine trees disappeared in the nearby woods. And from high above, Reverend Roger Stone, still white-knuckling the cherry picker bucket, yelled,
"What the hell is going on here?"
Back at the police station, the sheriff and my grandmother sipped coffee, while I had the best hot chocolate the vending machine offered.
"Just got a call. It killed the Browns. At least Randy and his two sons. Flipped their car out on 201 and then got them. Must have come up through that crack in the road."
He shook an arthritic finger at Granny.
"You never said anything about the Browns."
A woman came into his office with a green sewn binder. She handed it to the sheriff. I saw the words "tax ledger" on the cover. He nodded to her and didn't protest when I pulled the binder towards me and started to leaf through it. My grandmother examined her paper coffee cup. "If the Browns were there, Mama Esther didn't see them. But you have to remember, she was just a little girl. I can't figure why it didn't go for Roger." The sheriff shrugged.
"Maybe he was up too high."
Granny shook her head. "You saw how it could stretch up when it wanted. It didn't want him, and I know his family was there. Mama Esther said that John Stone was the first to strike Clyde after Bentley threw him to the crowd. After that, everyone else joined in. He was the spark that ignited the crowd. John Stone.
After the Bentleys, stones should have been on the top of the list.
Well, back to square one.
I spoke up as I read the ledger. Well, maybe not, because according to this, the Stones moved here 10 years after the killings. The Browns were here, though. I put the book down. Grandma, didn't you say the mayor was there that night? What was his name? The sheriff shook his head.
Son of a... His name was Brown. I remember now. I saw it in the archives once. Damn!
But who was John Stone then? Granny asked. An out-of-towner? I stuck my nose in the ledger. Mr. Johnson says to always look for the simplest explanation. Since Mama Esther was little, maybe she heard it wrong. Maybe they weren't saying John Stone. I put my finger on the list of families in town that year, and I scanned downward. My heart skipped a beat. I dropped the book and darted out the door, leaving a hot chocolate fingerprint next to Curtis Johnson and his family. I pumped my arms and legs all the way to Mr. Johnson's house. I banged on his door and looked in through his window. Nothing. His car was gone. Catching my breath, I jogged back toward the town square, and I heard a cry from the park. I sprinted with the last of my breath, and I found the creature. Now with two arms, a leg, and a head, reaching for a cowering Mr. Johnson.
No!
I shouted as I slid between them, holding up my hands. I tried to sing Grandmother's Lullaby, but my mind went blank. The form twisted and turned in front of me, the ooze-covered face hovering inches from mine. It flowed up and down, looking at me as if it was examining a new plaything. Out of the corner of my mouth, I shouted to Mr. Johnson behind me.
Run!
What? No, I'm not leaving.
Just go!
I put my head down, squeezed my eyes tightly shut, and pushed sparkling orange hands toward the monster. I listened to him go. Even without looking, I could envision his adorable, unathletic, out-of-shape junior high science teacher run. I could feel the energy grow in my palms, and I opened my eyes.
You will leave him alone. You will leave everyone alone.
The form shot upward over my head, and side flows poured out, encircling me. I worked to breathe as its stench surrounded me, and I summoned up all the strength I had.
If you're so hungry, eat this!
And I shoved my hands into its belly. I felt the warmth on my back and the power flow in sparkled wave after wave through my shoulders and down my arms, like a repeating neon sign. I dumped everything I had into that beast. The creature's face pointed to the sky, releasing a deafening shrill yell, somewhere between pleasure and pain. And I continued to dump everything I had in those orange sparkles. I knew by the lightheadedness that I felt that I was spent, but I found the strength to keep going. The dark ooze encircling me receded, and a second leg appeared out of the goo, this time in the correct anatomical location, if there was one. Another leg migrated into a similar position, then the arms. The towering form shrank until the crown of a head emerged, followed by a face, a neck, a torso, a pelvis,
Dark ooze dripped down the legs into a small pool at its feet. I felt solid flesh and realized my hands were on the abdomen of a teenage boy. He smiled at me, and I quickly handed him my jacket to cover himself before I collapsed onto the ground. He bent down and he grabbed the ooze, now more of a dark gel. He folded it as if it were nothing more than a beach towel, and he laid it at my feet. Then he drew a circle in the dirt to indicate where it should go, and I understood.
"Are you Clyde?"
I asked. He helped me up, placed his hands on my shoulders, and touched his forehead to mine. I felt an amazing rush of life as my whole head sparkled orange, then my whole body. He returned the power I'd given, along with everything else he had. When he was finished, I stepped back, feeling as though I could run for miles and live 1,000 years. But there was something else in that transfer. It was his 95 years of knowledge. I broke down and I cried, feeling Clyde's long torment while he was imprisoned in that ugly, vengeful form. For he'd not only healed his murderers that long ago night, but he had also taken their darkness, creating the ooze that had kept him alive for a century, to feed off of him, a greedy hunger that sought the life force Clyde had given the townspeople, a force passed down through their offspring. My energy had finally given him the strength to overcome his captor. He sat down with a tired look, wrapping his arms around his knees.
"I'm supposed to help people with this power, right?"
I asked. He held a finger to his lips. I nodded.
"Keep it a secret."
"Got it."
"What about you?"
He just smiled. And he turned to dust. I watched as the breeze took him, layer by layer, until nothing remained but my jacket.
So then, I picked up the ooze, walked home, and I threw it in the well. And that's where it's been ever since. "Now that's a whopper, Clarissa,"
Aubrey said with a smile.
"You've told some pretty big ones over the years, but that one takes the cake."
Clarissa sat behind her desk and sipped iced tea with her 82-year-old lips.
"I never told anyone that story."
Aubrey raised an eyebrow.
"Well, I'm not surprised. It's total BS.
She put her hands on her hips.
"But to clarify, Dr. Johnson, am I to understand your first husband was your junior high science teacher?"
Clarissa cackled.
"No, he was too old. But one summer, when I was home from college, his nephew came to town to visit. Whew, that boy was a looker. I snatched him right up, and I took him for a walk in the woods."
She winked.
"Then the loft in the barn, and then the back of his Chevrolet."
Aubrey laughed and gently slapped Clarissa's hand.
"You are terrible," she said. "Oh, I'm so sorry, Clarissa. I know you have a thing about being touched." "It's all right, honey." "How long have we known each other?"
Clarissa asked. Aubrey just shrugged.
"Long enough for me to know not to get sucked into another one of your stories. Come on, Dr. Johnson. We can't sit here in your office all day. You have a retirement party to get to. People are waiting."
Clarissa just smiled.
How long have you been working for me? Aubrey rolled her eyes. You know the answer. Ever since you hired me out of high school 20-something years ago. And how long have you been my clinic manager? Aubrey looked exasperated. Clarissa, we don't have time for this. Clarissa just shook her head. How long? Aubrey tapped her foot. Many years.
Uh-huh.
And after all that time and trust, when were you planning on telling me about your cancer? Excuse me? I've been a doctor for over 50 years, hun. Give me a little credit. Where is it? Aubrey shook her head. This is your day. We can talk after. Come on. They're ready to cut the cake. Even the mayor showed up. Clarissa laughed. I've known the mayor since he was a little boy picking boogers out of his nose. He can wait. I've got no family left, Aubrey. And when I pass, I'm leaving you the farm. Aubrey rolled her eyes. Awesome. Large tract of land in the middle of the city. It'll fetch a fortune. Clarissa raised a finger. I know you're joking, but that land can never be sold. That's why I told you my story. Now, have you been talking to the well this week, like I asked? Aubrey looked away. Yep, because I enjoy nothing more than walking out into the woods to talk to a hole in the ground. Aubrey, this is important. Clarissa, what's important is seeing everyone who took off work to be here for you today. Come on now. Clarissa just nodded. Today is my day, isn't it? Aubrey smiled. You've served this city longer than any doctor I know. Saved countless people when no one else could. You deserve today. Clarissa smiled. But now you know my secret. When I couldn't help medically, I gave people the touch without their knowing. I'm nothing special. Aubrey sighed. Quit stalling. Come on, it's time. Clarissa gave Aubrey a strange look. You're right. Come on and give an old woman a hand. Aubrey took her hand with a smile. A smile that dropped open wide as she watched a sparkling orange glow flow into her hand and up her arm. The warm glow took a left at her shoulder, settled into her right breast, and faded. Clarissa smiled. Now that's one less thing for you to worry about, honey. My grandmother always said, no matter how big the barrel, it only holds so much water. And mine is finally empty. Now go on. Let me rest my eyes a minute. Tell everyone I appreciate their coming, and I'll be where I need to be shortly. Alone in her office, Clarissa closed her eyes and exhaled her last. A 13-year-old girl stood up from the old woman's body and smiled. And an 18-year-old boy, dressed in wondrous clothing, smiled back. And he took her hand.
Where are we going, Clyde?
You'll see. There is so much for you to see.
Standing on the balcony of a third-floor condo built on what was once the Flanders land, nearly 70 years ago, Edward Bentley, a recent transplant from upstate New York, flipped a burger on his grill, stepping back as dripping grease hissed on the coals below and shot up flames. He gazed out at the view from his new residence, the best in the city. Myers Creek flowed below, and beyond that, the undisturbed nature preserve known as Pritchett Farms. He turned back to his burger, and his ears perked up.
Was that thunder? That wasn't in the forecast. He shrugged and worked his spatula under the thick patty, ensuring it wasn't stuck to the grill. The rumble came again, a little more pronounced. A gurgling, gravelly, almost growling noise. Edward Bentley peered up. It was a cloudless blue sky. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This has been The Well, Part 2. Written by M.N. Wiggins. Narrated by me, Brooke Jeanette. Sheriff Danny was Tucker. Deputy Rupert and Reverend Stone were played by Jordan Reed. Mr. Johnson was Mason Amadeus. Clyde was Josiah O. Knight. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Ian Epperson and Bridget Freeman. Hear more from Tucker, Jordan, and Mason on their surreal improv comedy science fiction masterpiece, Podcube. Just click the link in the show notes, and I promise you won't regret it. Our producer-level patrons are Tattooed Fox, Rhiannon, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Amy Harper, Jackie K, Chantel Payne, Nick, Jake R, and Kozamine. Thank you so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us most places under Pod 13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo, and you'll find links in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, you can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. And you can find that in the show notes too. Bridget Freeman is done waiting for that chicken. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
A todos los que buscan un lugar para sentirse bienvenidos, en Culver's, nuestra puerta siempre está abierta. Desde el momento que entras, te saludamos con sonrisas. Es lo que más me encanta de trabajar aquí. Estoy orgulloso de servirte una Butterburger hecha a la orden y un Fresh Frozen Custard, porque sé cuánto cariño está en cada bocado. Hacer que tu familia se sienta como en casa con una comida fresca es realmente un placer. Visítanos y déjanos darte la bienvenida como solo recibirás en Culver's. Desde Wisconsin con amor, bienvenido a Delicioso.
A todos los que creen que su familia se merece lo mejor, déjame decirte por qué las Butterburgers de Culver's son extraordinarias. Podría hablar de nuestros ingredientes saludables, como la carne fresca y el queso auténtico de Wisconsin, derretido a la perfección, así como te gusta. Pero cuando tomas esa primera mordida, sabrás por qué nuestras Butterburgers son tan especiales. Así que invita a tu familia a lo mejor con una Butterburger de Culver's. Desde Wisconsin, con amor, bienvenido a Delicioso.